Okay, I really appreciate this opportunity to make this presentation at this fairly important session to recognize three giants in the field, and especially the you'll hear a lot about John Hanks. Actually, the John Hanks work, the early work on land atmospheric interaction, Bear-Soil evaporation, and his general approach of trying to understand the fundamentals and then doing using models and doing field work has really influenced a lot of the work I do these days. So I'm going to talk about a problem which is of importance to soil scientists. Probably we don't recognize how important this is. It has to do with the climate change. If you look at the warmest year since 1880 has been 2014, and you can see the climate change and the increase in temperature. And I think the main reason for this is, as all of us know, is the loading of greenhouse gases. And so if you look at the greenhouse gases, and you see that methane, you see the methane is one of the gases I'm going to talk about today, and carbon dioxide and water vapor. And if you look at all these things, you immediately see that there's a major soil component here, the unsubsurface component. So I'm not going to talk about all these. I'm going to more focus on the issue of methane. So if you see, the water vapor is very important for all of us here. So I think I'm going to sort of make an argument why we need to study methane. Primarily, if you look at the methane leakage from shale gas development, which is going to be resulting from the expected growth in the gas production by using shale, you'll see that in these type of systems, you're expecting possibility a lot of leakage into the atmosphere. As you know, methane is a very highly potent greenhouse gas even compared to CO2, even though it has a shorter life. So people are trying to understand what is the real loading of methane into the atmosphere. So there are two ways of doing that. First one is called the top-down approach. The idea is that you use airplanes and above-the-ground measurements. I mean, all these measurements, they have come to this number that about 62.2 to 11.7% of the natural gas production in the field can be detected from the air. But when you look at the bottom-up approach, where you make the measurements from the ground, and you see the numbers are quite different. So there are a lot of papers discussing why these differences are. So the talk I'm going to give today, I'm going to focus on the how do you make measurements of methane in the ground. So to introduce to this idea, so what we are seeing here is a formation where there are two possible sources of leakage is identified. First one is the well leakage on the left, and the fault leakage on the right. So the point I'll be making in this presentation is that if you look at the detection, if you're trying to detect this signal, this is going to be affected both by the soil condition, the atmospheric condition. Just to make the point, what you see here, when it leaks, this plume is going to form below the subsurface, and the way this plume is going to migrate and attenuate depends on the soil and the soil moisture condition. And as you know, the soil moisture conditions are again going to be affected by the heat and mass flux boundary condition at the surface. So if you look at the distribution of the methane coming on the ground, so this is not going to be uniform. It depends on the pathways which are going to be developed in the formation. So now when the wind flows, as you see here, if you make a detection here, if you are detecting above the ground, what you are going to see is that signal is going to be affected not only by the atmosphere, by these processes, it's also going to affect the cumulative effect of what is going to be generated above the detection point. So these things really introduce a lot of uncertainty into a detection of the signal. So these are some of the issues we will be discussing. So the general idea is that the gas pathways are controlled by the soil heterogeneity, soil moisture, mass flux, heat flux, and the land surface. So this requires us to look at these problems by coupling these two dynamically different systems at the interface. So the approach we have been using in our work is to use this idea of intermediate scale testing. So if you are looking at a problem, a lot of the times we understand the processes at the column scale or the pore scale. But when you go to the field can be quite complicated. One has to do with the fact that the field is always heterogeneous, and the second is the dimensionality. So you parameterize processes at a column scale, and when you try to upscale it to the field, then you'll find that it is almost impossible to do that. So what we have been doing in our work is to work with what we call intermediate scale. We try to mimic the heterogeneity in the field in the laboratory under control conditions, and you can make measurements at any scale you want, and this type of information is very useful when you try to model and try to get insight into the processes. So these are some of the facilities we have at my lab in Colorado School of Mines. And the basic idea here is that you can, with these type of systems, you can better control the initial and boundary conditions. And if you look at most of the models we develop, the models are partial differential equations, and initial and boundary conditions are very important. And if you don't have control, then you are not going to get your data correct. Second one is in the field, you will never be able to measure the heterogeneity at all the relevant scales. So in the laboratory, if you can control this in the lab, we can measure this thing. And then we will also get very, very fundamental insights into models, because subsurface systems are very difficult to see. So again, this is the approach we use. So what I've been doing in the last several years is that most of my work in the early days were looking at the subsurface in the tank. So now we actually develop a new research facility where basically we couple a climate control wind tunnel to a soil tank. So basic idea is that this is a closed loop wind tunnel, so you can actually control the flow through the atmospheric system, and then you also can monitor the subsurface system. And these are very complicated problems, because we are looking at the dynamics are quite different in a slow mean Darcyan type of flow in the subsurface, and then Stokes type of flow in the atmospheric system. So then the idea here is that you have the soil tank underneath, and it's a highly instrumented with all sensors, and the wind tunnel is sitting here, and then you are, actually this is a cross-sectional view, you see this is the top of the soil tank, and these are the dimensions, so you can actually control the climate, and you have different type of instrumentation. We can measure very accurate profiles of the velocity fields, you can get very accurate data on the soil conditions. So we have done many, many experiments, and I think I'm going to, this is 10 minutes, I'm going to talk about one of these things. So we can control the climate, we can control the wind velocity, we can control the temperature, we can go to sub-freezing, and these things allow us to look at problems in learning freezing and permafrost. Humidity, we can control the humidity, actually 95% these numbers, and we can control the precipitation. And we can, actually we have done many, many experiments to try to understand what happens at this interface. So to give you some examples, and what you see here is effect of wind velocity. So we are running so this is basically a boundary layer, so we are measuring the boundary layer quite accurately. You could see that how the wind velocity is affected by the, the boundary layer is affected by the wind velocity. So you'll see that, this is obvious, this type of information is going to be needed if you are trying to model evaporation and the type of interface problems I mentioned earlier. And similarly, we can see the effect of temperature. You can see for 22 degrees versus 35 degrees, obviously that the boundary layer is going to be quite different. And the relative humidity doesn't seem to have a major effect, but in some problems I'll talk about later, it may have some effect. So we also look at the soil properties. So in this particular case, we are looking at what is the surface roughness on the boundary layer. So in this, you can see that we are just, one of these, the blue lines is we take a basically sandpaper, and so the idea here is that we don't allow the air or the gas go into the soil, so we're looking at just roughness effects. And then we look at different coarse sand, fine sand, and the gravel. You could see when you put the gravel, this has quite a big impact on the boundary layer. And this has implications of soil moisture, evaporation, and the turbulence between these soil soils. And the second one is we are looking at the soil saturation. So we are looking at a lot of problems where the soil moisture condition changes, and you see how the boundary layer is going to be affected by the soil moisture and the water content. So the general idea we are presenting here is that if you look at this, you are going to deal with the heterogeneity of the soil and this micro topography. And this has effects on the way the gas, in this particular case, evaporation, the evaporation in general, and the particular case looking at the gas migration. Also, we can look at we are looking at some of these problems in our lab now. So we are looking at the heterogeneity which creates this lateral moisture flow, and on top of that, we have this turbulence happening in the vegetation. So these things are very important in these problems. So in this particular case, we ran some experiments to try to understand how the macro roughness or the micro topography affect the gas migration. You see that this is actually some pictures we took, infrared pictures on a gas leakage problem. You could see there are a lot of leakage, the accumulation here. So if you look at the velocity profile, you see this is the upstream profile, and this is above the top of this heterogeneity, top of this hill, and this is here. You could see the wind patterns are quite different. So if the gas is going to leak, you are going to see that this micro topography and all these other factors affect the signal. So just to show one experiment, a small, simple experiment we did to show. So first we are looking at two scenarios where the soil is what is evaporating and precipitation. If you have one permeable layer, low permeability layer hanging in this, embedded in the column, you see that if there's a leakage, then you are looking at the relative permeability and the low water content is somewhere here, and you see the gas is going to go through. Now, if you look at a situation where the water content is very high as a precipitation event, you could see that the relative permeability is very low, the gas is going to bypass. So this is going to create an effect on the signal. So we ran an experiment in one of our smaller wind tunnels before you go to the larger tunnel, where we actually do the instrumentation below the soil surface, and then we control the wind velocity. Of course, we cannot control the climate here. And then we look at two scenarios. One is completely homogeneous. So we inject the gas here, methane here, and then we heat the soil moisture distribution. But if we embed this fine sand layer, you expect to see, at least in a pseudo steady state, you expect to see this type of soil moisture distribution. So immediately you could see that if the gas is going to leak, there's going to be lower relative permeability of the gas phase, and it's going to bypass. So we have very precise flare niacin detector where I can detect the methane concentration here. So there are four cases shown here. First one is we are taking measurements every 3 seconds, and the other one we are taking measurements 60 seconds. I'm just showing a 60-second picture here. You see there's so much variability in the signal, but when you average it, you see that it is much lower than some of these peaks. And then similarly, in the heterogeneous case, you see that the signal is quite different, and you see that on the average, the signal strength is much, much lower. So if you summarize all these results, you can immediately see that for various cases of injection rates, I'm going to look at this one, you could see for a homogeneous case, the production is much higher than the heterogeneous case. In other words, the subsurface has this natural attenuation capacity to hold the gas in place. So we are doing the same type of research for CO2 leakage. We are showing that the gas has the system has a natural attenuation capacity. So I want to actually make some general conclusions, which is not related to this talk, this is related to a lot of work we do. So there's an improved understanding of basic processes at the spore scale, and their manifestation at different modeling and observation scale will continue to advance subsurface sciences. I think it's important to do this type of research. We are doing this multi-scale research, and of course, we have to go to the field eventually. And I also make the argument the existing problems are challenges in hydrology and soil science, for that matter, are the physical interfaces. And also, some of these experiments, even I show this in a very short period, one experiment, these are a very complex experiment, and most important thing is we had to design this experiment, they should be theory-driven. They had a good theory behind all these experiments. And then I think last point I'm to make is that a lot of these problems we are working with, we have to move away from our centers of our disciplines and move further away. Actually, these conclusions are going to be, I'm going to talk about this more, I'm going to be going doing the AGU's Langbein lecture in AGU in December. So I'm going to actually sort of talk more about some of these ideas and what we should be doing in hydrological sciences and soil sciences. With that, I will...
maybe one question? Thank you.
Yeah, so we have, I didn't mention this, these tanks have pressure sensors. We measure pressure, and then we are looking at there are two types of pressure. One is the signal itself is going to produce a pressure gradient, and the second thing was is the hypothesis we are testing, what is the effect of barometric pressure fluctuation going into the soil. So that is actually controlled by the, I was sort of showed some results earlier. We don't see that in a finer soils, but if it is, we are also looking at issues of macropores and things like that, how the pressure signal travel through the formation to resolve these problems.
Very good. Thank you, Tim.